I got to be honest with you. I'm very excited about having our guests on this morning. Dr. Timothy Eberline is joining us this morning. He is the director of the Siteman Cancer Center at St. Louis at the Barnes Jewish Hospital. Dr. Eberline, really good to meet you, sir.
Very nice meeting you, Tom. I've heard a lot about you.
Well, hopefully not all of it was bad. Now, we also are joined this morning by the director for the SIH Cancer Institute, Jennifer Badu. How are you doing, Jen?
Great, Tom. Good to hear from you.
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Eberline, as I was doing my research and reading up about you in 43 years of experience, oncology, treating breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and I look at your research and what you've done there, working on tumor masses, solid masses, how to deal with them, and I look at this and I think, if I end up somewhere where I need cancer treatment, I want this guy on my team, and I realize that's the whole point of this announcement made by SIH last week, the partnership with Siteman.
Yeah, it's a really terrific partnership, and SIH brings a lot of strength, their credibility in their community, and Siteman Cancer Center brings a lot of strength in that we have a lot of experts who specialize in very unique cancers, and so it's a great partnership from that perspective. Great collaboration.
You know, it's interesting that once upon a time, I think I almost look back on it now as naive that, you know, when you started cancer treatment, we were still talking about, you know, a silver bullet, a singular solution to cancer. And, you know, as the more and more you do the research and you look and you realize it's such a vast field, cancer, one single word really doesn't suffice for what cancer is. It needs to have like three or four words, I think, to be able to give it its full impact. There's no silver bullet. There's no one single solution.
Well, Tom, I frequently say when I was first embarking on training in cancer, we used to be lumpers. We tried to treat all kinds of cancers similarly. So if you had a breast cancer, we tried to treat everybody the same. If you had colon cancer, same way. And now, 40 years later, we recognize that these are very distinct, different diseases, not just between colon and breast, but among breast cancer patients. There are multiple different diseases. They're called breast cancer. They may look the same under a microscope, but they're treated completely differently. And so that kind of expertise is now being brought to bear with these very personalized treatments in lung cancer and breast cancer and colon cancer and other types of cancer.
You know, it's interesting because I lost my best friend the 17th of this month, pancreatic cancer, so I did a lot of reading on it to try to help him. And it's realized I almost started thinking of it as an intellect, that there are four, in particular, pancreatic cancer, and there were four areas, and, you know, he had the worst variety. And you almost start assigning it some type of an intelligence, like you have to fight it like an enemy. Is that over-emotionalizing it, you think?
Well, no, but I think what you're bringing up, Tom, is that you need to think of these diseases in a comprehensive fashion. And Siteman has particular expertise in the genetic understanding of the basis of cancer. And we have developed a number of very personalized treatments in leukemia, in lymphoma, in lung cancer, and many other types of cancers. And that has been a game changer. It has improved survivability of patients, and it's also reduced the side effects because these more personal treatments tend to be more focused and less toxic.
You know, and I find this interesting. When you were looking at the list, Jennifer, of things that the SIH Cancer Institute and Siteman are working together on, it's really interesting because I had a friend of mine, coworker, who had breast cancer. And she talked to me about this genetic testing. And when I finally tracked someone down who was an expert in genetic testing, they were in St. Louis. And being, Jennifer, having this new tool in your library, in your toolbox, this is a good thing among others. What else do you draw away from this partnership as a high point?
As a high point, I would say that our physicians and our highly trained specialists, like our radiation therapists, our oncology nurses, we have access to their personalized targeted therapies and treatment plans, but also the best practices. What's new in genomics and genetic testing to help identify more personalized and targeted therapies? Sharing of these best practices improve patient care and improve our staff's knowledge base and ability to look at the guidelines and to make advancements through our quality initiatives for all the way from survivorship to screening and outreach and education. We've done a great deal of work in lung cancer and really bringing to light this focus and with a targeted approach. I remember it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Dr. Eberlein, when you said to our BJC collaborative group, you guys are really looking at a lot of best practice. We're really focusing on a lot, but I think we really need to focus and stop boiling the ocean and focus on lung cancer. We have highest incidence and the highest death rates, and that's what we've done as a collaborative and as multiple cancer programs join together and look at best practice and evidence. We've been able to turn the table on lung cancer screenings and bringing low-dose CT screenings to every region that the BJC Collaborative has helped with, and we've been successful. I don't know if you have any of the data in front of you, but I know that I was very excited to hear in our first year of low-dose screenings, we were able to actually move the mark on stage 1 and 2 cancers. Of the 104 that we diagnosed as a collaborative, 64% of them were stage 1 and 2. The national average for this is 24%. So what we're actually doing is finding cancers earlier through a collaborative approach, using evidence-based practice, using all of our data, because we do have all different niches, and we all have different kind of types of cancers and the complexities. And when we find these really complex cases, like Dr. Eberlein mentioned, we can collaborate our specialists, our physicians, with their physicians and help smooth that transition. So what is appropriate at the NCI, at that world-class best level, and what's appropriate at the community hospital level? Many of the components on which you said is care. There is no one bullet. There is a whole team of cancer specialists taking care of patients, and we're just so happy to be able to join with Siteman and really bolster and kind of like you peeling back that onion. There's so much involved with genetics and genomics we haven't even begun to touch yet, and we're so excited to do that with Siteman.
You know, Dr. Eberlein, I often think that the diagnosis of cancer, the minute you hear it, the clock starts ticking on treatment. Does collaboration require more time? I mean, it is collaborate, because I always think of so many people in the room that you have a hard problem coming to a consensus. Does collaboration, is it time consuming? Is it a problem in that respect? I've always been curious.
No, I think that, you know, we have instantaneous collaboration and access, and that's very, very helpful in the management of patients. I also would pick up on something that Jennifer mentioned, and that is that, you know, there's a high rate of cigarette smoking. There's a relative high rate of obesity, and many of the areas in the southern Mississippi Valley has some of the highest mortality of colorectal cancer in the entire United States. And so this partnership is a way of capitalizing on the credibility of SIH in its community and providing the outreach, education, et cetera, in order the screening methodologies that Siteman has developed as an NCI designated cancer center, and then diagnose these tumors at an earlier stage. And if we could do that across the entire catchment area of Siteman Cancer Center, partner with organizations like SIH, that would really improve the health of our community.
You know,
because we would diagnose these cancers earlier, and they would be much better treated.
And it's very often, and it sounds so asinine to say it at face value, the best way to cure cancer is to prevent it. And at some point people, yeah, they're very funny. But that's exactly what we're talking
about. 50% of cancers are preventable.
Yeah, but that's exactly what we're talking about.
If we could magically, you know, not cigarette smoke and exercise and have better diet, et cetera, we would reduce, over a period of time, we would reduce the number of cancers that we identify.
You know, Jennifer and I have talked in the past, and I still read the community benefits and the survey information. In particular, my home territory, southeastern Illinois, which is a healthcare desert. And you talk about colorectal cancer. I know people who died, right? By the time they went to the doctor, it was too late because it was inconvenient to go because it was too much of a trouble. There's a psychological component. If I don't know, it can't hurt me. It's almost like being an ostrich. And I was wondering, Dr. Eberlein, 43 years of experience, when it comes to human behavior in this field of where do you find that? How do you get people involved in their own health if they don't care enough about it in the first place?
Well, there's a couple of points that are very important, Tom. The first is people are fearful of the diagnosis of cancer. You know, just the word frightens a lot of patients. And they have to realize that today, the medical community has much better treatments, much more targeted treatments, much more personalized, and the mortality of cancer has decreased 26% over the last two decades. So we've made significant progress across all comers, all types of cancer.
Jennifer.
And the second point that I would make is that if we get people to understand how to screen for cancer, particularly in this time of COVID, where we're all nervous about going anyplace, let alone to a medical facility, et cetera, but it's really important that people think about their own health in this time of coronavirus and still access mammograms, PSA, colorectal screening, et cetera, because we've seen a dramatic reduction in the number of screening tests done nationally across the United States. And those of us that are experts fear that that is going to mean further months from now, we're going to start to see more late-stage cancers being diagnosed because people did not come in and continue to do their screening.
Yeah, I remember talking to thoracic surgeon Dr. Miller at Carbondale Moore Hospital and asking him one day, I said, so what happens, what's the first symptom of lung cancer? He says, if you have the first symptom, it's already too late. And that always stuck in my mind. We're speaking this morning with Siteman Cancer Center Director Dr. Timothy Eberlein and also SIH Cancer Institute Director Jennifer Badu. Jennifer, you know, it's interesting, and I've known you long enough to where when you were talking about the lung cancer success, the program, I could hear the sense of pride in your voice for the accomplishment. But the fact is you also know that, you know, we built the institute and we learned by the time we were built we needed more room. We need more. You have a lot of patients coming through at this point. I mean, and this prevention is a big deal along with it. But the pressure for you being one of the few areas here that you can get this kind of caliber of care, I think an important item, and you built your toolbox, as we mentioned earlier, a little larger with Siteman. So what's in it for Siteman Cancer Center is the question. Dr. Eberlein?
Well, it's very hard, Tom, for Siteman Cancer Center to access, for example, the primary care network that aligns itself with SIH. And so for us to communicate and educate the population near Carbondale and in that community, we really count on the collaboration with the credibility of the physicians at SIH. And that can help us by we design the programs and they have the credibility in their community. And so they can get out in their community and educate their population and screen them. And just as Jennifer commented, diagnose lung cancers at a much earlier stage when they're much better treated with much less toxic treatments.
Yeah, and those toxic treatments are an issue. You know, Jennifer, I think there's something that appeals to me in this particular area, seeing people get together, and that is it appeals to my idea of medical science being held to a higher ideal.
Correct. It takes evidence-based practice, and it takes a village. A great deal of effort has gone into the ISTEP trial, for example, and really getting out and educating primary care physicians on the benefits and the value and making shared decision-making and smoking cessation readily available. But as we continue and develop some best practices and roll out screening initiatives, we look at the same thing. We're going to start, you know, we have initiatives going on for colonoscopy the same. October comes, everything turns Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We need people to be aware. Like Dr. Eberline said, 50% of cancers are preventable. So we're really looking at prevention efforts, going into the schools, talking about smoking and vaping and all of these things, and getting people out there and being more active. One of the great programs that Siteman offers is the 8 Ways to Stay Healthy and Prevent Cancer. And, you know, how do we do those things? How do we move our mission forward if we're always chasing our tail? So we really want to get out there and really move the mark on population health. And we can do that as a collaborative partner, but even more so as a Siteman affiliate, using the highly specialized evidence-based practice and teams to mobilize such initiatives and to really see a difference.
Can you give me an example? Because the term best practices catches my attention a lot in the information I was read. Could you give me an example of a best practice that will be imported from Siteman that I can understand as a layman?
Let's say if we were looking at a new therapy and the infusion nurses were not typically used to providing this. So there would be some pre-education, some post-education, some observations, see one, do one, teach one. There will be shared educational events between oncology nurses and radiation therapists. There's also ongoing educational events from physicians to physicians. I think there's one coming up on the advancements in HEPA biliary cancer. So we're constantly hearing and collaborating over whether it's tumor boards or shared planning meetings or even after-hours educational dinners where we're finding out about the latest targeted therapies or what's new in neuro-oncology and crossing the brain barrier. So it's really about staying ahead of time and really knowing what's coming down the pike and what can we do to really collaborate so that if maybe a phase one or two clinical trial that's not available here that we know is available at Siteman, we can get those patients right up there. And that's one of the things that Siteman gets from us is patients on clinical trials, because that's how we move the mark. That's how we continue to advance research in practice. And so by collaborating with academic centers and NCI Center, we're really bringing world-class care, best practices, to what we're currently doing, and then going back and forth and reevaluating what works and what elements.
Dr. Eberline, what's the future right now? When you look over the horizon just a little bit on your tiptoes, what do you see promising for cancer treatment?
Well, I have said many times, Tom, I actually think that we can make cancer a chronic disease. In other words, no different than high blood pressure and other types of medical illnesses. If we diagnose cancer earlier, we are now having better targeted treatments. We will be able to control the disease rather than the disease controlling the patient.
Right.
And I think that's something that's really exciting. It means that we will continue to make progress. I hope that the coronavirus does not slow us down, as I mentioned before, about the patients, getting screened and so on. But it's a very exciting time. We've seen treatments that we only dreamed about 20 years ago.
Yeah, like genetics. We never thought that. I mean, I remember genetics was the last thing we thought of when it came to cancer treatment. It was blow it up with chemicals, right? Before I let you go, you know, and I've listened to you two very closely this morning, and there's something that I came away with that I usually reserve for universities. The three pillars of the academy, so from the Socratic method. You learn things, you teach things, and you share the things you learn and teach with the community as a whole. And, you know, when it comes to higher ideas, right, there aren't many more than that. But that's what that's my takeaway from today, Dr. Dr. Eberline joined us this morning. That's kind of my takeaway, the very essence of this.
Yeah, well, exactly correct, Tom. It's a great partnership and collaboration. And it's a way for us to expand our expertise into a community that has great credibility. And it's a great way for that community and the local physicians to access the expertise that really only exists at a place like an NCI-designated cancer center. So that collaboration, back and forth continuously, what we learn, we can push out to the community, and they have the credibility in their community that they'll be able to diagnose patients earlier, and when they need, we're there as a backup and a partner to help manage difficult patients, etc.